Accession number 30403, Mr. Andre Codin, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Codin?
21st, 10th, 1922.
And where were you born? Where were you born?
I was actually born when my mother was pregnant in Vienna. We were in a poor state of economic circumstances, and she actually came from the old Austrian Empire, Galicia. So she went to her mother, and her mother had a large farm with cows, horses, goats, turkeys, geese, chickens, you name it, they had it. And she gave birth to me there. And that is what in the old Austria-Hungarian part, which then became, after the war, the First World War, it became Poland, Galicia, right, in the mountains up there. And that's where I was born. And where I spent the first 3 years.
In Galicia.
Life.
So that was actually Poland at the time?
Yeah. After the war, after the First World War, it was Poland.
Now, what did your father do for a living? What did your parents do for a living?
That's a good thing. Austria, after the First World War, was a disaster economically, especially Vienna. Unemployment was rife. As a matter of fact, when I was still a young lad, I still remember the soup kitchens on the streets, right? Which the Americans, in their generosity, I think it was ex-President Hoover or somebody who financed it, organized it. And my father, by trade, was an upholsterer, but he had very, very seldom that he had didn't have a steady job. It was just occasional jobs that he had, right? Especially because of his political activities, he had a bad name with the bosses.
Now, tell me about, because I know it's important to your family history. What were his politics? Can you explain exactly what
he was? He was a radical social democrat. Right? In 1934, there was an uprising in Austria, especially in Vienna and the larger towns, and it was squashed. The clerical, the clerical fascist party called itself the Christian Socials. And they then formed themselves into the so-called Fatherland Front. They dissolved parliament and all parties and trade unions, etc. And all the social progressive innovations that the Social Democrats, when they ran Vienna, introduced. They were this declared null and void, and the people, like my father, who were active in the party, and the Social Democrat Party had a armed militia, right? And in the uprising, they used arms and etc. It was a bloody uprising.
Now, what did your father do? Firstly,
he fought in that uprising, and after it was squashed, he was arrested and put into prison. Well, it wasn't a prison actually; it's like a concentration camp.
And that was 1934.
That was in 1934. Yes, in February. It's the so-called February uprising, 1934. Right? And this was the foretaste in Austria of Hitler, because Hitler came 4 years afterwards.
Now, you were only 12 then. Were you aware of what was going on?
Oh, yes, very much so. Because my father, we didn't have a flat. We had one room that we rented from an old lady who lived in a nice house, in a nice block. And her husband had committed suicide because he had gone bankrupt. And we had one room. Now, that room didn't have any water, didn't have any electric light. And no kitchen, nothing at all. Just one room with one window going onto the courtyard. Unfortunately, outside our window, which was at the ground floor, the maids from the better to do middle class people used to come down and beat the carpets. So we had to close the window, you know, most of the time. And that's where we lived. We had to use the toilet. We had a bucket in the room and a wash basin. And these were our washing facilities, right? And once a week, I went to the public showers. Right? And that's how we lived.
Are you saying
my mother, she had a sewing machine, you know, with a foot pedal throttle, and she got from a tailor or whatever you might call him, he gave her bundles of shirts, trousers, and whatnot, right? And she took those and she sewed them together, sewed the buttons on and made the buttonholes, and I took them back to him, and he gave me a chitty, which she then cashed once a week, right? And I brought new stuff for her to work on. And she worked from about when I left for school, from about before 8 o'clock, and she worked till late at night. And my father, he just went around and did occasional jobs where he could.
Now, what about your father's political beliefs? What exactly were they? What was the nature of your father's political beliefs? He was a socialist or a radical democrat?
A radically social democrat.
And what did that mean? I mean, where did he pick that up from? Was it just a family thing for that? What were the origins of it? Why was he so committed to the cause?
It goes back to the First World War. As a matter of fact, last July, I flew to Germany because, through a coincidence, too long a story to tell you, I found out that a friend of mine, who originated also from Vienna, had committed suicide. And his wife is with her.
Stick to your father. Well, where did your father's political beliefs come from?
Well, that's what I'm telling you. That's where it comes from. And that's where I found the proof of it. And I went over there. Now, that woman, his widow, she was a Sudeten German. You know what that is, yeah? Yeah. And she'd come over to England, and she worked here for 20 years for World War. He was on the Italian front, Austro-Italian front, the so-called river called the Isonzo. There were two battles, like the Somme battles here. And he served with his officer, who he told me was a nice chap. Anyhow, they were attacking once the Italian trenches, and they got under fire, and then they got the command retire, and they did so, right? Now, my father had the rank of what you would be here, like a sergeant major, and they retired, And then they heard the voice of the officer calling from where they had come, from the Italian trenches. He was calling for them. So my father detailed another two blokes and himself, and they crawled out. It was dark already. And they crawled out and they found him. He was entangled in barbed wire, etc. They got him free and they brought him back. Now, he wasn't injured at all. What it was, he had a pair of new riding breeches, which 2 days before he had shown off to the boys. You know, he told them about it. And he was entangled in the barbed wire. Right? Now, my father was severely wounded on the way back. And the officer visited him in hospital. Right? And he told him, you know, he thanked him that he helped him, etc., etc., and so. And then he told him, Herman, by the way, you've got a bronze medal. He recommended him. Got a bronze medal for bravery. And on the way out, before he went, he turned around, he said, the officer said to him, by the way, I got a gold one. And my father was in hospital there, recovering, and he started thinking. He said, there is the bloke saving his bloody breeches because he's an aristocrat. He didn't do anything. He caused me to be injured. He gets a gold medal, and I, because I'm a working class lad, I get a bronze medal for doing something, well, brave, right? And he started thinking, and you must know, at the end of the war, right, the whole Austro-Hungarian Empire was dissolved, right, and what used to be an empire stretching from what is now Moldavia all the way to western Poland and down to northern Italy, and what is today Bosnia and Serbia and whatnot, right? And became Little Austria, right? And the economic situation was horrible. And there was a rise of, you know, the working class started looking for their rights, etc.
And your father joined.
And that's what pushed him into, he told me about it. That's what made him think. He wasn't a politically inclined person before, but that's what made him think. And by coincidence, the Austrian aristocrat, where this lady worked, when Hitler came to Austria, this aristocrat left Austria, came to England, and he became here one of the richest private collectors. I'll show you. She sent me a photocopy of. I'll bring it in.
No.
That a photocopy of a Times magazine in 1980. When he died in 81, the Times magazine had about 6 pages on him because he left all his collection, which at that time was reckoned £13 million. That's 81.
Now
he'll maybe three times as much. He left it all to this country.
Now, so did your family share your father's political beliefs? In other words, did he persuade your mum? Did you join him in his political beliefs?
I did, because what he did, that's what I was going to tell you. The house where we had this room where we lived, there was until 1934, there was the Social Democratic Party, local party, and once a week on a Saturday evening they had a meeting there, and my father used to take me with him in there from when I was about 6-7 years old. And I remember always one day that I was there with him and I was holding his hand at the back of the hall, and there was a bloke, usually, you know, somebody came, held a speech, etc., etc. And I tried to follow it, and I, with my loud clear boy's voice, I turned to my dad and I said, "Dad, can you understand what he's talking about?" And it was so loud, I forgot myself. And there was a hell of a laughter, because apparently, my father told me later on, lots of people shared my view. They didn't quite know what it was on about. So after the meeting, the secretary of the party, of the local party, came to my dad and he said, "Herman, give me the lad the next time you bring him in, and if you can't keep him quiet, we'll keep him quiet." And he took me and put me, by that time all the people knew me, you know, there was the little bugger, loudmouth, and he took me onto the you know, there was the hall, right, with chairs, and then there was a raised podium, right, and he put me there there was a table there for the speaker and the secretary, and he put another chair there, and he put me there in the middle, and he said, "Now we have got the lad here now, he's not going to interrupt us this time." And he had told me, "Now, if you want to know something afterwards, ask me," right? And I've been there every bloody meeting until the 1934, when the uprising was, and the party was dissolved.
Now, what about your education? What school did you go to?
I just went to a elementary school and to a... what they call the next one?
Secondary school.
Secondary school, yeah.
And how did you do at school, would you say?
I did very, very well indeed.
In what way? What were you good at? What were you bad at?
Well, actually everything. And just because this was Austria, and there was a certain amount of anti-Semitism, not in the first teacher that I had in the elementary school. He was a nice chap. He was a comrade. He served with my father in the same unit. That's the teacher there. Yeah. And that's a picture of elementary school. Right? Can you see me there?
No, they can't see it, remember. So,
now, right. Can you?
So in what way was there any anti-Semitism at the school?
Well, they didn't want a Jewish boy to be there was always one of the boys was made into a, you know, the prime pupil, and they didn't want a Jewish boy to be there, so they gave me one in one subject, they gave me a bad note, and that which I didn't know how I deserved it, you know.
How much anti-Semitism were you aware of? Because, you know, as you were growing up.
Oh, yes, there's...
What forms
in,
did
in
it...
Austria, anti-Semitism is endemic. You must know that the anti-Semitism of Hitler, for example, is of Austrian origin, right? And it was endemic. I mean, I remember my father telling me off, because opposite the place where we lived, there was a judge lived. And his son, the little bastard, where is he? He's here. There he is. Right? He went after me afterward, one day after school, behind me, and he sang a little rhyme, you know. About Jews, I'll translate it for you. Jew, spit in your hat and tell your mama that's good. And I turned around and we had our pens and our crayons and pencils in wooden sort of containers, you know, which you opened up and put it on your desk and took from it. And I took that And I hit him on the head, and he was bleeding. And he told his dad, and now the judge, oddly enough, knew my father, because the courthouse was near a cafe, and my father used to play cards. And he stopped him, and he told him a couple of days later, told him about it. He said, I'm not making a big song and dance about it, but tell your dad, tell your boy to restrain himself, right? And my father took me there, and I told my father why I did it. I didn't do it because I was beating him, you know. I was a hooligan or something. He insulted me, you know. He was singing these anti-Semitic doggerels. And that was that. But this was the case. But not in that, in the elementary. We had that teacher. He was a very, very nice, humane chap. But in the next one, the secondary school, right, there we had separate teachers for each subject. History, German, geography, and as can be expected, the physical training teacher, he was a bright Nazi bastard. Yeah, he was.
And how did he show it? What did he do? What did he do? How did he show it?
Well, he made stupid remarks, you know, and I was a very fit lad, and he couldn't do it in my case, so that's me. I was always on top.
That's a gym display team you're showing me, yeah.
Yeah. And so he couldn't, but he used all sorts of other things, you know. And, he made us march around, you know, instead of physical training, he did a military exercise with us, you know, in the gymnastic area, and that sort of thing. And then when Hitler came...
Hang on. What about... before Hitler came, what about signs of anti-Semitism outside of school?
Well,
what about anti-Semitism outside of school? How did you notice much of that?
Yes, yes, yes. You saw that everywhere.
In what way? I mean...
Well, in shops, on the street.
So how would it show itself in the shops? I mean, would they just not serve Jews, or what was it? Or were they just rude?
Just rude, or... tell you to piss off if they noticed you were Jewish or they thought so. And it was apparent everywhere.
Were there any attacks made on Jews at that time before Hitler arrived? I mean, were they attacked in the street or?
Oh yes, there were things like that too. Yeah.
Were you ever attacked?
No, I was.
Now, what happened after your father went... because he was imprisoned, what, 1934, in a sort of concentration camp. Happened to
14 months. No, he was just kept in prison there. That's
and it. Then he was released?
And then he was released.
Now, what's the next thing that you remember that, you know... So you were at school till... how old?
Well, the next thing... until I was 14 years old. Right? And after I left school, I took an apprenticeship in a mechanical workshop. I was the only Jewish boy in the workshop.
Now, what were you apprenticed as an engineering fitter or what?
What they did, they repaired and fixed and built sewing machines. For example, they used to buy old sewing machines and repair them, put new parts in there, and then sell them. They had people who went round the country to the farmers and sold these sewing machines, right? But the firm also had a sports shop on the other side of the road. They sold everything in there, from tennis balls to boxing gloves, you know, skis and skates and whatnot, you know.
Now, which bit were you in?
Pardon?
Which bit were you in?
I was in the workshop.
In the sewing machine?
Yeah, yeah. I was a mechanic apprentice.
And did you enjoy it?
Yes, well, I enjoyed the work and so, but I was the only Jewish lad in there, but I must say they didn't make any remarks about it because, as it happened, the owner of the workshop and the shop was a Jewish family, but I was the only Jew employed. So they didn't make any of that. And after Hitler came...
So that would be 38. Now, were you taking part in politics on your own account by this time?
Yes.
Tell me about, before we get to... So, I mean, because when you're 14, 16, you're old enough to take part. Were you taking
part?
Well,
yes, now, what you must know, the Social Democratic Party had a youth movement where the very young ones, right, so the kind of pioneers, they were called the Red Falcons. They got together, they went on wandering in the Vienna woods, etc., etc. And during the holidays, the school holidays, they went camping together, right? And they had a red handkerchief around the neck. And then...
So when did you join them?
Well, as soon as I was admitted, with 7 years.
When you were seven, right?
Yeah. There were kids in there, 7, 8, etc. And on the 1st of May, they were always marching along on the demonstrations, right? Singing.
They continued after the 1934 rebellion, though?
Not afterwards, no.
No,
the party was dissolved. You see?
So, anything else about the Red Falcons?
Well, after the Red Falcons, when I got older, I then joined, after the 1934, the League Socialist Youth.
League of Socialist Youth.
Was illegal already.
So that was also prescribed, banned?
That was prescribed, yes. All that was prescribed. Anything of a political nature other than the clerically fascist regime.
So you joined them in 1934?
I joined them shortly before, actually.
1933.
Yeah.
Now, how was it organised, the League of Socialist Youth?
In the legal time, what it was, we used to meet we didn't have an official place, so we must, that's why I brought this album, so that you get an idea that, here, in Vienna, the Danube goes through Vienna, right? Now, they used to, in spring, when all the mountain, the snow and the ice melts and all the rivers feeding the Danube, right? You come down the mountains, there used to be a danger of floods. Now, the good old Kaiser, right, in 1860 or something, he built in Vienna a canal so that they, with a sluice gate, so that they could sidetrack some of the flood in the main river through the canal, through Vienna, and then end it again into the Danube, when the Danube was leaving Vienna, right? And then alongside the Danube itself, on the left-hand side of the river, down the river, they opened up a wide, goodness, how wide that was. You can't imagine that about 10 times the length of that. Were just fields, right? So that when the Danube rose, it could then flood this area. Now, the working class used to go down there. That was their Riviera in the summer, right? And the bridges, you can see a bridge here, right, on the back. Now, in the summer, we used to meet there. We used to...
And what would you do?
Well, somebody used to come down. Sometimes, you know, there was always a superior member, talk to us, give us political lectures and whatnot. As a matter of fact, just hold.